Can I ask a question after my first sentence? Okay, I want to thank everybody for patience of being here at the third lecture. And since I'm not one of the organizers, it's my privilege and somewhat also my duty as the last speaker to thank the organizers and field staff that provided for a very nice workshop and for everything but sunny weather. So. So, okay, so this talk would be kind of hopefully the most concrete of my...
No, excuse me,
Oh, you had a question, that's right. But I'm not one of the organizers, so...
So could you be specific and tell, I'd like to know what you're talking about in a very specific context. I know you're talking...
No, no, but this is coming. Today I'm going to talk about, will still be a little, maybe a little kind of up in the air, but I'm going to talk about hopefully two examples. So the first case is that I want to talk about is interwave sensor formation. So this is system that you obtain on the interval, say, 0, 1. You take length, so you take, say, well, that's kind of a less trivial case. And then you take a permutation, and you permute the intervals, and you put them back rigidly, and you obtain a map, E of, depends on parameters sigma and lambda. And for suspensions, so I'm looking at suspensions of such a map. And these are, say, area preserving flows on surfaces of genus bigger than 2, because I took n bigger than 4. So the picture is something like this. So this is a genus 2 surfaces, and there will be some singularities, say, saddle singularities. Do not have to be saddle singularities, and if we take a transverse interval, then there will be discontinuities corresponding to trajectories that go to the saddle, and the return map will be an interwave sensor formation. There is a procedure of suspending, there is a nice procedure of suspending an interwave sensor formation in order to obtain a flow. Possibly the flow is not smooth at the singularities, but it can be of course made smooth. So there are several way of doing this, but one can obtain a smooth flow on a surface, or one can obtain a flow which is smooth everywhere except these points. So the theorem for this case, also there is a notion of genericity, so almost all flow or almost all interwave sensor formation is fixing sigma permutation and Lebesgue on lambda. So you change the parameters. And the theorem is that the following, that for almost all, say, flow or for almost all interwave sensor formation, and let's see. I'll prefer to talk about the flow. There are lambda 1 equal to 1, strictly bigger than lambda 2, strictly bigger than lambda g, positive. And there are, in correspondence of this, there are distribution. D1 is just equal to the area, so area. And then D2 and dg. And these distributions are a subwave of minus 1. On the surface, so this is my surface M, and such that if we take a function, so F is an H1 function. Well, here I'm cheating a little bit. The H1 function, there are some problems with the singularities. So let's say that the function is H1, but it's supported away from the singularities. But this is just a technical point, important but somewhat technical. So let me sort of No, actually, I think no. I think something stupid. I think that H1 is the same anyway. So H1 is H1. So the statement says that if say D1F equal to DJF equal to zero, then the Lim soup. So here I'm giving the statement which is proved. So it might look a little different from the general form of the asymptotics that I put on the blackboard earlier, I mean in the previous talk. This has to do with, it's a little weaker because at some point the amount of technical work that you're willing to put into this is. So the Lim soup of the log of the of the ergodic average of F along the flow divided by the log of T is equal to lambda J plus 1. And I should say take actually add here lambda G plus 1 equal to 0 just for the sake of the statement. Let's see, is that right? So it means that Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely. Yes, I should. Let me change these numbers. Yeah, this is very stupid thing to do to use the same lambda. Let me use G is the genus of the surface which is associated with the interface transformation. So this is the statement. So let. Oh, yes, of course. Thank you. Yes, I want this not vanishing, and so if I have the first one not vanishing, then I will have one here, and actually I have the unique ergodicity, so it's actually stronger, and then I hope that the rest is correct, and this is true for almost all x on n. But actually the upper bound is stronger than almost all is for all x, at least for all x that do not go to singularity, and the lower bound is proof for only for almost all, and along a subsequence of times, of course. So this is the theorem, and let me give credit for this. Of course, this was first conjectured by Zorich, not for functions, but just if you want, it was conjectured for Zorich for. On the interval for interval transformation for functions which are piecewise constant, which is the same on the surface as saying that we are controlling only homology of trajectories and not ergodic integrals, and then was conjectured by Konsevich. You can think this is a joint conjecture for smooth functions. And, well, of course, Zorich-Konsevich conjecture also included that these numbers are all positive and distinct. And so I gave a proof published in 2002 of the whole picture, but so the theorem, but the information that the news are distinct. So of course the statement gets worse because they could be all equal and you cannot distinguish different directions. And recently Artur Avila and Marcelo Viana a different method that gives. So they concentrate on the exponent that gives simplicity of the spectrum, including the fact that they are all positive. Again, lambda. I'm sorry. I'm so used to lambda. Okay. So this is the theorem. So what I want to. So I want to connect this to what I've been saying, especially I want to explain why how comes that here the spectrum is finite, and how comes that we are able to reduce this terrible situation where we were with an Hilbert bundle to a nice finite dimensional situation. And this is not too difficult to explain, but first let me mention that this is, I recall that this is the R2 non-integrable case. So I don't have to talk about the Tuck-Miller flow. I can just remark that these surfaces are, if you do the suspension, they can do it in such a way that the generator V, let me call it generator X of your flow, it's, you can take a time scale such that you have another flow that commute with X, so you have two flows, two vector fields that commute on the surface minus singularities, and there is the fact that X and Y are actually blow up at sigma. So you want to add some control on how they blow up, and of course this is related to the nature of the singularity. And then if you do this, and then you have you look at the definition that I gave, which are of course modeled to a great extent on this situation, the deformation space is just equal to the Tuck-Miller space, and coincides with the Tuck-Miller space of abelian differentials, and the moduli space is the same as moduli space. And the normalization flow is of course the Tuck-Miller flow. So is yet one more way of completely trivially equivalent to the usual way of looking at these structures. These structures have several incarnations. One is holomorphic differential on a Riemann surface. Another one is a flat surface with a trivial holonomy. So you can define everywhere north direction and transport it everywhere, except of course at the singularity. And the other incarnation is a translation surface. So it's a surface with an atlas with change of coordinates given by translations. And or you can say it's, you have a frame, a commuting frame, which is, again, of course, the same thing. And, well, let me, of course, mention, I want to mention here that the theory of the Tuck-Miller flow, so the dynamics of the Tuck-Miller flow is itself a subject, a very interesting subject. I'm not going to say much about this here. So this is, you can just put some name, Maser and Veach, starting in 82, 86, proved several properties, including there is a canonical absolutely continuous invariant measure. So while the space is stratified and the strata are not always connected, so you have to specify that a little bit, but in the appropriate sense, the flow is ergodic and is also mixing, and it is measurably anosov, so it has non-zero Lyapunov exponent. And so I gave some my contribution to the dynamics of the Tuck-Miller flow is not extremely crucial. And recently there is very interesting result by Avila, Guezel, and Yokos, which is exponential decay of correlation. So it's a very interesting system. So what I want to, just explain how we get from the space of from the bundle of distributions to just finitely many exponents, and how the theory can be carried out in this case. So the theory about deviation. Of course, there is the problem of the exponents. So I'm not going to talk here about the problem of exponents. Dealing with the exponents, there are two ways of dealing with the exponents. One that is mine that doesn't get that they are distinct, and one is that Avila-Viana that gets they are all distinct. I'm not going to go into that any further. So we have this over moduli space. Over moduli space, we have the bundle of, say, X invariant distributions. And remember that the moduli space now it's thought of let me call it X bar. So it's thought of every point is a pair X Y, and then roughly it will quotient this by the action of diffeomorphism of the surface. This is basically the idea. So every point of the moduli space is roughly a pair X and Y of commuting vector fields, which are defined everywhere but a finite number of points, which are, we can think of the points as being fixed. And so at every point you have several structures. So, well, first of all, at every point you have a space IX of distributions that satisfy, or you can take IX1 that are in H minus 1 M and satisfy X D equal to 0. No. I cannot.
How do you know that there are minus
N? How do I know? I have to. This analysis, you have to construct them, but.
You construct them.
Yes, but it's not geometric construction. So the best I can say about distribution is a posteriori, but the theorem tells you that you can recover them a certain. Roughly, you can recover them as certain suitably weighted average ergodic averages. So take a zero. Say you want the second distribution. Okay, what you do is take a zero average function. You integrate over some typical orbit, and instead of dividing by time, you divide by time to certain exponent, roughly. Well, the exponent is lambda is nu two. Roughly, and nu two is, I mean, what I'm saying is, I need to be made a little more precise, but I cannot say more. These distributions are supported everywhere on the surface. What else? They are regular. They are more regular than H minus one. I mentioned that Artur asked, and I mentioned, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, that regularity, the subway of regularity is related to the nus. So the dj actually is dj is actually of order 1 minus nu j, so Sobolev order. The Euler regularity I don't know, so I think there is some related work that says that they are Euler actually, but by Bonahon. But in a slightly different context, I never got to really. That's true. That's right. Okay. If you work on integral extent transformation, they are related to locally to piecewise constant functions in some sense. Well, they are. They are functional.
No, but
yes, that's right. You can do you can do it like that. But it doesn't tell you what these functions are really.
Yeah,
they are some functional. Yes,
well, you have to.
I know. Of course, you can. I mean, what Arthur is pointing out is that you can prove these theorems now. You can prove this is entirely in the context of interest and transformation using Mar minimum Sario cost solutions of a cohomological equation. So that theorem essentially says the following: that if you have any function modulo cobounderies, it's a locally constant, it's a piecewise constant function. So cobounderies do not count, as I mentioned, because of Gauss-Schwarz-Hedlund. So you're reduced. So this, in some sense, explains why while Zoritsch was right in the first place, that you are reduced to piecewise constant functions. But only a posteriori, you know, eventually was maybe knew it, but so you reduce to piecewise constant functions, and there, of course, you have a finite dimensional cycle, and then you can apply Osler-Elec theorem, and you see everything on this finite dimensional cycle. But you have to use this strong version of the cohomological equation, of the solution of the cohomological equation that is recent. So the method I'm going to explain here doesn't use cohomological equation. So this is a case where cohomological equation, you don't need to actually use them, and you get somewhat stronger results. So you get better regularity for the function. It's more, it always goes both ways. You can use a normalization to try to get the cohomological equation, or you can use cohomological equation as an ingredient in your proof. So, okay, so I have this bundle, and I also want to remark that for any point in the moduli space, there is an area form, there is an L2 space, there are Sobolev spaces, and also there are forms eta x and eta y, which are closed form, which are just obtained by contracting the maybe I want this to be minus, but whatever. So this structure is completely clear if you think of locally, you just have, say, x is ddx, y is ddy, omega x is dx wedge dy, and so on. Eta x is dy, eta y is dx. So it's completely clear what locally I'm talking about, and the main point is that the L2x norm is crucial in all examples. Actually, the L2 norm is invariant under renormalization. You multiply one direction by exponential t, you multiply the other direction by exponential minus t, the area form is not changed, and so the L2 norm, the normalization acts here. So it's just saying that L2 RT x is actually the same as L2 of x. So as Hilbert space, not just as with a norm. This is, of course, false for the Sobolev spaces. Sobolev spaces are distorted. So, maybe I read this here. So, in this case, instead of looking at the invariant distributions, one can look at a different, at a slightly different space, which is essentially equivalent. So, I said that you take gamma as an arc of orbit, and you look at it as a distribution. Well, it has a natural parametrization by the flow, but you can also do a kind of a more geometric way, is to just take the same arc of orbit and you look at it as a current, which means a linear functional on forms. Okay, then you notice that this is, of course, obvious that Zoritsch was doing this already. So you notice that you don't have to look really for all currents, because an arc of orbit, you can study return orbits. And if you know return orbits, then you decompose the usual way and you get all of them. So return orbits are almost up to a small error, they are closed. So it's okay. So close, so take gamma return orbit, close it, and then you get a closed current. Okay, so then we have the bundle. We have the bundle of closed currents. The one is a little bit confusing here, because these currents are of of dimension one, of order one. So there are many ones, and also there are subless of subless order one. So there are, if you want, there are three ones, but this one here is for the subless order. So maybe it should be a minus one, but so closed currents of subless order one. And you see in a moment that the subless order one it plays a role. And then, so the idea is now to replace the in this case you can use, instead of using the cocycle of invariant distributions, you use the cocycle of closed currents, and then you use the generalized Laram theorem. It tells you that the real cohomology is actually equal to Z1, whatever it is, over exact form. And so what you can look at is, so what you, of course, this is now a finite dimensional bundle, and for that you have the Zorich exponents. So you can do Oscillating theorem on this, and is a symplectic bundle, so you get 2G exponents. The spectrum is symmetric, so on this you have nu one. A priori you have nu one, nu G, and then you have minus nu G, minus nu one, and these are the Zorich exponents, and you have to study them, and you get the results that I have mentioned. But there is also the cocycle over the exact stuff, and this that I'm writing here, yes, I mean it's trivial, you can say, in the sense that what Zorich did is to realize that you can explain polynomial deviation by oscillating theorem on the appropriate bundle. Once you get to this bundle, I mean, you didn't get to this bundle this way. You just studied the homology part of this business, and the fact that the exponents are symmetric is just because the cocycle is symplectic, and the space of dimension 2G, and so here I'm not saying much. He also did more. He realized that this is 1, so this is minus 1, and also realized that nu 1 is strictly bigger than nu 2, and this follows from which 86, because there, well, etc. So that's where he was, and then he conjectured several things, but I mentioned that earlier. So the cocycle over exact currents can be easily seen to have zero. There is only one Lyapunov exponent, which is zero, with of course infinite multiplicity, and so the entire behavior of the Ergodic average is carried actually by homology. And as Arturo was pointing out, you can see this also in another way by going to interesting transformations. So it's the dimensionality which is crucial. And this is very simple. I mean, this is it's a very simple remark. And it goes like this. So if you have a current C which is exact, and C is going to be the differential of U, and since C is a one-dimensional current, U is going to be a function, essentially. And also, since C is sub of order 1, U is an L2 function. And now, now you look at the norm of C, which is simply given by definition by the L2 norm. Well, you can take U0 average just to fix the constant, and you look at the L2 norm of U, and this norm is essentially equivalent to the H minus one norm on compact set. So this norm is equivalent to the H minus one X norm on compact sets. So what you get is that you, since the L2 norm is actually invariant, your cocycle on exact currents is isometric with respect to a norm which is equivalent on compact sets to the original one. So the Lyapunov exponents are zero. I mean, if you have an basically an isometry. Linear growth?
Yes, because from a relative cohomology,
No, but this bundle, the here are not including the relative. I mean this is not relative cohomology. This is absolute cohomology.
Yeah,
and you are doing this, you know, this is always modulo zero. I mean, whatever is logarithmic or is sub-exponential, you don't see it. So it just doesn't appear. So this is basically the idea that how you reduce this. So if you want to prove this theorem, the ingredient that was missing here is you might ask, how do you construct distributions? So how do you get this? Well, the distributions are constructed by some analysis argument once you have the exponents. So the fact that you can actually identify the direction given by the exponents with invariant distributions. Some analysis to be able to do it, and then but first you have to know that the exponents are non-zero. So this is, you know, so I'm not going to that. So this is I'm just trying to explain how you get how you reduce to, in this case you reduce to a finite dimensional bundle, so you can apply the Oszeletic theorem, and then you are only dealing with these finitely many exponents, and you struggle with that. Okay, so I'd like to, how much time do I have? 15 minutes? Okay, in 15 minutes maybe, that's not a lot, but let me just use the 15 minutes to say something about the Heisenberg case. I'd like to have more time for this, but so the Heisenberg group is the group of matrices like this, and one can consider a lattice. For simplicity, I will consider the lattice simply given by same thing, but x, y, z in z. This is not the only lattice you can consider, and it makes no difference to consider different lattices. There's just one integer parameter. So, and if you consider the manifold M being the Heisenberg group over lambda, this is a circle, is a twisted circle bundle over T2. Excuse me? Twisted. Yes, twisted means that it's only three torus. So it's not C3. Well, I mean, it's more precise than that, but. So you have the Heisenberg Lie algebra. Like this, and you can take some vector field in the Heisenberg Lie algebra. Let's call it H. And then you take the flow phi tx given by the action of exponential of tv. And these are known to be uniquely ergodic. Essentially, they project on a torus, on a two torus flow, because this is a bundle of a T2, so they project on T2, on a And this is uniquely ergodic if and only if the projected flow on T2 is. And one can prove the following result, theorem, that for almost all, one can prove much precise result than this. I'm just giving the almost all result. For almost all, you have that the average of for a smooth function of this is equal to of course the average of f over m. So there is a volume form which comes from the natural measure on the group, and here you put some coefficient on f, and here we have t 1/2 times log t to power 1/4 plus epsilon for any epsilon plus a remainder, and the remainder, say, the remainder is essentially gross with any small power you want, or maybe you can even take it bounded actually. And this d, excuse me, yes, there should be a factor, yes, absolutely, there should be a factor t here, and this is this belongs to the invariant distribution on m for x. I mean, it depends on x and t, but it is a function with values in the space of invariant distribution. Yes, there is a v. Thanks. So that this is the result, and let me sketch if you do this in this case, you obtain the following. Where did I write this? Well, I don't find in my notes what I wanted to say. Anyway, so the deformation space is just the automorphism of the Lie algebra. One looks at what that is SL2R, twisted product with R2. And, well, I said that one can reduce to outer automorphism, but let me do this. This is the way we did in the paper then. And then we have to look at the automorphism of the Lie group that fixed the lattice. And this is SL2Z, twisted product Z2. And so the moduli space that comes from the construction is the quotient of these two. I mean, can be, this is a good choice, and so it's some five-dimensional. Well, it can be written roughly, can be written like SL2. No, I don't want to write it like this. It's a five-dimensional manifold, which is a torus bundle, a two torus bundle over the modular surface. And of course, I remember that there was the XYZ. I won't really V. I won't adjust it by an automorphism, but basically, we had. I said that this is the basic action of renormalization. So in this case, the renormalization flow is not at all interesting. Is really, well, it's not any more interesting than let's make a better statement. It's not more interesting than the geodesic flow on the modular surface. So the renormalization flow is Anosov with I think the exponents are something like 1, 1, 0, minus 1, minus 1, which projects, obviously, onto the geodesic flow on SL2R over SL2Z. And since the fiber is compact, there is no way of going to infinity in the fiber. All interesting properties of these flows are actually, your normalization is clearly telling us that all relevant properties of these flows are actually dictated by the projection on the torus, which is what to expect anyway. So, but this, this is not, you may say, oh, this is obvious, but this is actually breaks down miserably if you go to a different nilpotence. So renormalization is in progress. So I don't want to say more. So then there is analysis. Analysis is here is very simple. It is Sturm von Neumann theorem that tells you basically that you can think of x as ddx and y as ix. And Z as constant. Well, this is, of course, you have a factor here because, you have many, but they all represent, all unitary, irreducible unitary representation are like this. On L2 RDX. So you can easily solve the cohomological equation in representations and say what invariant distribution look like in representation. So I have to be stopped. 5 minutes? Yeah. Okay, that's. Are you sure? Oh, so I can relax. Okay, so any unitary representation is basically this. So your flow. Well, I'm looking at x here. But, by an automorphism, you can always think that x is equal to v. So let's say that my vector field is, now I write it as x, and it's represented by ddx. You can always achieve this by acting with an automorphism. It's not a big deal. So then the cohomological equation representation simply is the derivative of your function phi equal to a function psi. So you know how to solve this, provided that psi decays to infinity sufficiently fast. But what is Sobolev space? Sobolev in representation. Well, or smooth vectors in representation. Well, everybody that knows representation theory knows that actually the space of smooth vectors is the Schwarz space. Because you can act with Y and we can act with derivatives. So Sobolev space is if you take sufficiently high order, it will give you decay because you have multiplication by x. So some of the function, so this is essentially polynomially decaying smooth of some degree. So you can solve this, and invariant distribution d of phi for every representation, this is simply integral of phi. Okay, then the problem is to glue and blah, 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 and there's some technicalities, but one can do this with very good estimates. I'm not going to that. I just don't wanted to describe the invariant distribution and then give you the calculation, this very simple calculation that shows that the exponent is 1/2, which is basically the renormalization corresponds to a dilation in the representation variable. So suppose that I have my representation pi that sends x into ddx and say y in ix. I neglect z because it doesn't matter. It's of course a consequence. And then you have pi t, which is the representation for the renormalized pair. So etx goes, of course, in etddx, and exponential minus ty goes into exponential minus t ix. And then you realize that the two are connected by the unitary operator ut of phi of x is equal to exponential minus t over 2 phi of exponential minus t x. So this says the formula you can write here is essentially that pi t vector field composed with ut is equal to ut composed with pi vector field. So take x or take y or take any element of the Lie algebra, you put it here, you represent it, you compose with the unitary operation of L2, and you find this is the relation that you get. So then once you have this, is where again you get after a factor, you get an isometry with a factor to any Sobolev norm. I mean, of course, the distribution are you need Sobolev at least 1/2 to get the distribution inside. So, but then you have some calculation like this. So the norm of the invariant distribution H minus S RT of XY. Well, you compute this as sup over phi of d phi divided by some Sobolev norm. So here you have a vectors say pi t x to some power, pi t y to some power, pi t z to some power applied to phi and L2. And you use again the fact the L2 norm is invariant, and you write this as a sup over, say, psi, and here is d of ut psi. I'm sorry, this is the absolute value. And here you use that relation, and so this becomes by the fact that u is unitary, so these are pi t. The pi t composed with u are u composed with pi. So the u is unitary. So what you get here is simply pi x to the power I, etc., pi z to the power k of phi. I'm sorry, no, of psi. And here is L2. And the L2 norm is invariant, so it doesn't move with t, so it doesn't matter, doesn't change anything. So I only need to compute what is d of ut psi, and d of ut psi, so it's obvious because d is just the average. And one gets that d of ut psi is just equal to exponential t over 2 of d psi. So the conclusion is that the cocycle up to a factor exponential t over 2, say, or plus or minus, is isometric. So this is a very simple calculation. It shows that you just go into representation and renormalization acts just by rescaling the variable in representation. And then, do we have still more 30 seconds? And then I just like to comment that this is a calculation that gives the exponent. And then, for instance, the exponent is right if you have a periodic orbit or renormalization. So then you exactly get square root. Otherwise, you get extra factors. The extra factors are given, as I mentioned, by the fact that you need to estimate co-boundaries in the C0 norm, so you have some Sobolev embedding. Sobolev embedding is the embedding of, say, HS into C0 for S bigger than dimension over 2. And in this situation, so you are interested in the Sobolev constant. And the Sobolev constant in this situation can be estimated as the injectivity radius of your distorted manifold to power minus 1/2. So one does, this is not a general fact, but one does some some calculations and see that this is the way it goes. And the injectivity radius of the distorted manifold basically depends on the torus, on the basis. So I'm talking here about the manifold M with the Riemannian structure determined by the frame. So this degenerates, and it degenerates roughly, well, it depends on your parameter, but it degenerates roughly as, so if delta is the hyperbolic distance in the cusp of SL2R or SL2Z, so you look at the projection on the basis, which is the geodesic flow on the modular surface, you look at how far at time t, renormalization are brought in the cusp, and you have that the injectivity radius is basically order. Well, the way I parameterize is basically of the order of exponential minus delta. So if you put the two things together, and then you see that you only need to know how far you can go in the cusp up to time t. Remember that also the time t of the system is exponential t. So this is the relation between the slow time and the fast time, time of renormalization and is small t, and time of the system you're studying is capital T. So if you use this, you see that any information about how far you can go in the cusp will give you some information, some bounds on the Southwest constant, so we'll give you some information about the correcting factor. So for almost all, you can use logarithmic law of geodesics, and you get logarithm t to power 1/4 plus delta. This is the correcting factor by logarithmic law of geodesics. And so final comment, I'm not writing anything anymore, so I couldn't explain why this is related to this unrelatable result. They got 1/2 plus delta in 1914, and it was improved. Well, the optimal result is you can get out of the logarithmic scale. But in logarithmic scale, the 1/4 plus delta was proved in 77 by Jurkowski, Fiedler, and Kerner, by completely number theoretical methods, and this is kind of renormalization proof. All right, sorry.